പിന്നീട് ഈ അലോക്കേറ്റഡ് ടൈം ഫോർ മെഡിറ്റേഷൻ അലോക്കേഷൻ ആൻഡ് മെഡിറ്റേഷൻ ഇസ് നോട്ട് എനഫ് വി ഹാവ് ടു ഫസിലിറ്റേറ്റ് ദ ഡെവലപ്മെന്റ് ഇൻ മെനി വേസ് ആൻഡ് ഫോർ ദാറ്റ് ദ ബുദ്ധ ഇൻഡിക്കേറ്റ് ദാറ്റ് വെനെവർ വി ടേക്ക് ടൈം ഫോർ മെഡിറ്റേഷൻ our way of facilitating is very very important and not a single yogi can understand the gravity of it or the value of it. So therefore the Buddha, as the founder of this dispensation, he himself first understood and then prescribing us and professing us about this facilitating, our ways of facilitating. And in order to give a briefing, we can say, according to the teaching of the Buddha, we have to facilitate this meditative life with our morality, sila mukhaya. So therefore, whenever we are going to a meditation center or a temple or retreat, we renew our precepts. Usually, the people abide, specifically Buddhists, are abiding by five precepts. But whenever you are to undertake a meditation retreat, you take the precepts. That is to facilitate the morality and to renew your mind. And that is the one way of facilitating. The other one is Sutta Anukaya, that means giving some theoretical understanding. So that is the one we are going to do now, that is to listen to some of the teaching of the Buddha. So as much as we are taking time for meditation, we have to allocate some of that time for listening, and that is called for theoretical understanding, or we can say book knowledge. So this is part and parcel of the meditative life. So with the morality and the theoretical understanding, the another way of facilitating is question and answer session. That is to say, a discussion, a dialogue with the senior meditators or fellow meditators. Then only you can pinpoint the difficult points which needs more clarification, and the dialogue is very important. With that only, we can continue with Samatha Bhavana, Vipassana Bhavana, or Samatha Anukaita and Vipassana Anukaita, that facilitating the concentration and facilitating the wisdom. So therefore, all these five come under individual responsibility. One has to take care of very senior, you know, disciples of the contemporary type of the Buddha, namely Venerable Acharya and Venerable Member Pottita and Venerable Sariputta, have a dialogue or discussion. And that helps for us to understand what is the contemporary time and what is the atmosphere under which they were meditating, and out of the topic or content of the discussion, we can see how much they are concerned and compassionate about the people like us, yet to come after thousands of years later, and get the points clear through their discussion. So this is a kind of discourse, kind of a dialogue, and not directly by the Buddha himself, but whenever Sariputta and Venerable Pottita. And there are some few crucial features, more than their detailed teaching of the particular sutta. Here the Venerable Pottita is asking Venerable Sariputta, whenever a monk is being accomplished by morality, that means whenever he taken up precepts, what is the next responsibility of that moral mind? bhikkhu towards the achievement of the spirituality or practice of the Dhamma. Whenever someone becomes a moral person, what is his next responsibility? You can see in the normal teaching of the Buddha, the three kinds of discipline or restraintment, called Sila Sikkha, Samadhi Sikkha, Panya Sikkha. So therefore, if someone asks this question from a conventional teacher or learned person, he will say after the Sila, he has to go for Samadhi. Or after the Sila restraintment, or Sila Sikkha, or Sila Anga, he has to go for Samadhi Sikkha, Samadhi Anga. So therefore, the question itself is with the direct answer, but instead, what the Venerable Sariputta is indicating, not the expected answer, the Samadhi, but instead, the Venerable Sariputta says to the Venerable Kottita, Silavatavaso Kottita Bhikkhuna, Panchupadana Khanda, Yonaso Manasikala. Without referring, without indicating Sila, Samadhi, Panya, kind of a formal, forward path, he says, soon after he is accomplished morality, he can directly go for Vipassana or directly go for contemplation on the five aggregates. So this is a kind of a revolutionary kind of a presentation. So that is why these kind of sutras or discourses are very, very popular among the Vipassana teachers, Vipassana traditions, or people appreciating the radical kind of literature. So therefore, Venerable Mahasi Seyaro, while he was living, he used to deliver talks on this Siddhavanta Sutta, and accordingly, I also decided to take this as a basic topic for today's talk. If at all we are to continue this meditation in future, I would like to take this as the basic topic, and as and when we proceed, we can take one step by step along this particular sutra, keeping this in mind. Whenever someone is accomplished with morality, he can directly go into the Panya Bhavana, or Panya Sikha, or Vipassana, and therefore, directly jumping from the Sila to Panya is not a present-day revolutionary thing. Even the contemporary time of the Buddha itself, it was there. So, whenever you are referring to the Noble Eightfold Path, you can see Noble Eightfold Path also not developed or presented about directly from Panya, the wisdom, to the morality, and from the directly from the morality to Panya, they are facilitating each other, helping each other in a reciprocal way. And under such circumstances, the Samadhi is not having a direct role, but we can't do away with that. But these two suttas is indicating us we can develop kind of a Samadhi, kind of a concentration as and when it arises, and keeping that chance, keeping this opportunity for the momentary concentration, we can see the relationship between the wisdom and the concentration, wisdom and the morality, and the morality and the wisdom. So that is the one feature. Throughout this particular discourse, you can see, and therefore, traditional presentation, methodological presentation like Sila, Samadhi, Panya, and those who are appreciating and appreciate only that, they are not happy with these kind of discourses. But you may find a fair number of discourses which is not following the traditional way in the Sutta Pitaka. So therefore, meditation masters, specifically biased for the Vipassana, is taking it. So having given that background, we will go little by little along this message what the Venerable Sariputta is explaining. Interesting Venerable Sariputta, he says, whenever the monk accomplished, whenever the monk is be with morality, he has to think about or he has to contemplate upon one's own five aggregates or attachment of the five aggregates with the radical reflection. This radical reflection also sometimes being translated as wise reflection. The Pali term is Yoniso Manasikara, and there are 11 facets, 11 ways one can contemplate, one can reflect, one can note, one can label each and every five aggregates. So today we will start how the materiality as aggregates, how the corporeality as the aggregate appear in 11 ways when you are reflecting in radical way, when you are reflecting in wise way. So Rupa Upadana Khanda is the what? Pali term. We translate that into English as the corporeality as an aggregate be attached, and that we can observe, that we can contemplate in 11 facets. This is a kind of a general instruction Venerable Mahasariputta is giving to Venerable Kotti. So, same thing if you are going to apply into the Satipatthana Sutta, the Kayanupassana, and the different facets of Kayanupassana. If you take in-breath and out-breath as Rupaskanda, if you take rising and falling as a representative of materiality, when you are doing walking meditation, the left leg and the right leg experience that materiality, how to observe it, how to reflect upon it in a radical way, in a wise way. The first method, it is indicated as observe the materiality as imperfect. This is another radical way of, or revolutionary way of observing materiality, because if you are not a meditator, if you are a person believing on the materiality specifically, you consider materiality as your wealth, materiality as your identity, materiality as something to be earned, and materiality as something to be accumulated. That is what you call economy. We accumulate materiality. Consider it is the security, it is my identity, it is my prestige, and it is the permanent thing. So therefore, whenever someone is following economy, or experience expecting economic gain, for such a person, if the Buddha, or with the Sahaja Buddha, or with the Kortita, going to say, just please your assets, for your movable and immovable assets as impermanent, it completely contradicts economic theories. It completely contradicts political theories. Completely contradicts socialist or sociological values. So that is why these kind of reflections are not so popular among the materialistic people. Not only now, even at the time of the Buddha. And therefore some people say, whenever someone is listening to Venerable Sariputta, whenever someone is listening to Venerable Kottika, whenever someone is listening to the Buddha, he will be a disaster to the economy. It will be a disaster to the politics. It will be a disaster to the existing social value. So therefore, all the Theravada countries are listed in the third world countries. They never come up to the first level because whatever they are earning, whatever the materialistic gain, they have kind of a way to reflect as their income. So therefore, they are not vehemently accumulating, become opportunities and to gain endless. So therefore, people criticizing the Theravada tradition, it says, whenever you try to be a true-to-type Theravada practitioner, you will not be a successful, economically successful person. You can't make use the essence of Theravada tradition as a political weapon. You can't be a popular person among the commoners. So therefore it is naturally becoming, you belong to a minority, and whatever the society or clan you are associating will be not so popular. So therefore always you go to the minority. So it's a kind of a social feature. Sometimes it against Theravada, but if the Theravada real practitioner, if they can understand this social criticism or criticism at the society at large, if this criticism negative, destructive or constructive, is the one we are going to test. The external world, physical world or materialistic world says that the materiality is the thing to be taken as an asset, to be accumulated, taken as a prestige, and keep on accumulating. But when Sariputta is advising to Venerable Bodhidharma, take this materiality as equal. Accepting this thing, materiality as important, impermanent, is a destructive criticism or constructive criticism, depending on the way you present the question. Other people will say, don't listen to Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Bodhidharma. You keep on accumulating. Your bank account must be 4 figures, 5 figures, 6 figures number. And your assets in the land, labor, capital must be more and more. So such people will say, don't look at them as impermanent. And they consider these materialities existing. And what I see is existing there. What is existing, I can see. But in meditation, we try to see again and again by looking at one thing, does that matter? When you repetitively observe, is it that what you see is existing or existing thing that you can see? This ambiguity. In Kayanapasana, in materiality, this is what the Buddha given us as a test. We can verify and practice in the maximum or rising and falling, or how far we can see in walking meditation, or whatever may be, I am persona, or whatever may be the contemplation of the body. The way the Buddha presents this trial, the experiment, is very, very scientific. The Buddha says, all the materiality at large, you can't prove or disprove. So therefore, you have to be a reductionist. So you select one particular tiny part of the materiality as a representative of the materiality, that is what we call the object of meditation. The whole world, or we can say the material world, is an object. But our mind has very little comprehensive knowledge, so therefore we can't take the totality, the whole world, as an object. So, because our mindfulness is not so strong, other spiritual faculties are not so strong. So the Buddha says, reduce into a comprehensible tiny parts. For example, when you are not mindful, when you are not a meditator, your eye is accumulating so much of visual objects in this way, different colors and different shapes. Your ear is absorbing so much of sound waves, attractive and destructive, gross and subtle, Western music and Eastern music, many, many ways. And your nose is searching and chasing behind different smells. And your tongue, breakfast taste is different from the lunch taste. Lunch taste is different from the dinner taste. And it is different from the juice, which is different from the dessert. So it is ever-increasing different tastes. And when you are sitting, you can see your beddings, your furniture, your vehicles, and everything. You feel so much of different touch. And your mind is keep on churning on with issues. Unwillful, unconscious movements will happen and be aware of that. Thank you.